Welcome to Dialogue, a true crime conversation. I'm your host, Rebecca Sebastian. So happy to be back with you with a new episode today. Before we get into today's guest and conversation, I want to let you know that Dialogue and Yellow Tape, which is my other true crime endeavor that features true crime trivia, we now have merch. So if you go to bonfire.com/dialogue-yellowtape, if that's not long enough for you, you can find completely new, never seen before items, hoodies, t-shirts, mugs, tote bags, which I'm really, really into. And I hope you'll take a minute to check them out. I'm going to put that link right in the show notes so there's no confusion around the URL. But I do hope you'll check it out. If you've been looking for a way to support the show, this would be an awesome one. Not only does it help offset the costs I have with Dialogue, but it's also a really cool way to show that you're a listener and perhaps start a good conversation with somebody else, because the designs are bold and they're interesting. And you know I'm all about the conversation and killing the small talk, so hopefully the merch will help you do that and perhaps bring someone into the conversation who wasn't already here. So please take a minute and check that out. I am also giving away a really cool two pieces of merchandise. There's a contest going on Instagram right now, so please go to @dialoguepod on Instagram. Of course, it's Dialogue, D-I-E. And check that out so maybe you could win, you and a friend. Again, all the info will be in my show notes, and I just wanted to make you aware of it. So let's get right into today's episode, which I think is going to leave you with a smile on your face and hopefully a new podcast to listen to. If you're already listening to it, then you know what I'm talking about. But if it's new to you, so excited to introduce you to my guest, Andre Matthews, and his podcast, Bruh, It's a Murder. Yes, I said Bruh, It's a Murder. You can hear me and Andre's talk all about how I feel a little bit like a boomer saying that because my kids give me a hard time for saying bro or bruh or brah. He pulls it off way better because of he's a millennial and way cooler. But I do hope you will look past my reciting that title and listen deeply to this conversation, because Andre's doing great work. He is just a really amazing guy. I reached out because I like his podcast and I found out all these other amazing things about him. He was in the military. He is getting his education. He's going to become a physical therapist for special needs individuals. Huge heart. He is hilarious and passionate, and it just comes out in his show. His show focuses on people and cases that fall by the wayside, whose stories are not well covered in mainstream media. So a lot of times these are going to be people of color, marginalized, LGBTQ, I should say. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that he's putting his attention there, but he's also, you know, like many of us, he's into true crime across the board. He's a Snapped fan. He loves creepypasta, which we talk about because, again, I'm a boomer and I don't fully understand it. But he really just has a heart of gold and a real creative streak. There's a musical component to his podcast that I find really unique, and we talk about that. One thing I want to say is that I incorrectly called an organization the Trans Doe Project. What I was actually talking about was the Trans Doe Task Force. So that was my mistake. I wanted to make sure to correct that. And I'm even going to link it in the show notes because of the great work they do and the important work they do. And it goes nicely and hand in hand with Andre's work on spotlighting cases where people are misgendered or perhaps missing and loved ones have a hard time finding them because perhaps their gender identity is different from their given gender at birth. So I do want to make mention of that and fact check myself, I guess. I also want to thank Andre for being vulnerable at the top of the show. He shares something that he's actually not talked about publicly, and we don't get into the whole story, but he does mention something quite personal, and I just want to thank him for sharing that and allowing that to be part of the conversation that is not lost on me. And I know that that's a big deal, and I appreciate his vulnerability, and I know you will too. So please enjoy getting to know the delightful Andre Matthew And please check out his podcast, Bruh Is a Murder. Just kind of get over yourself if you're over 30 and feel weird saying it. Just tune in because he's having really great conversations. He also, like me, is on Get Vocal on Thursday nights. His show is later than mine. I think it's at 10 p.m. Eastern. Mine's at 7 p.m. So you can find him, you can find me, and so many other true crime creators over there having great conversations, doing live streams. Again, that's a free app called Get Vocal. We'll put that in the show notes. And yeah, please enjoy episode 48 with Andre Matthews. Andre, thank you so much for being on Dialogue, a true crime conversation. I'm excited to talk with you tonight.
I appreciate you reaching out to me.
Well, you know, it's been a long time coming. I think we have social media podcast friends possibly in common. And so I started seeing your podcast art over and over, and I was so drawn to it. So I downloaded it, subscribed, and I always have like a list of podcasts to listen to that I find it harder and harder to get to the more I become a podcaster. I don't know if you can relate to that.
Oh, 100%. Because you make friends with everybody. You're like, no, I want to check out all these shows.
Yeah. But
now I have a huge laundry list.
Yeah, a laundry list. And then you're making a show. So it's just like less and less time to actually do it. But I'm glad that I did. And I reached out kind of cold. And I was pleased that you were so gracious to talk with me. So maybe we could start with your podcast. Then we'll kind of go backwards and work our way back. But your podcast is called... And I already want to apologize in advance because my kids make fun of me if I ever say bruh or bro. So I have to say it, but it's Bruh Is a Murder, right? So
yes.
Talk about the title of your show. How did you come up with it? What does it mean to you? And maybe you say it as well so it sounds better.
So I say like bruh a lot just as like an expletive. I, you know, it's really the gender neutral term, I just say. And when I talk to my friends in real life about true crime, we like watch it together. We have like our own little watch parties and stuff like that. Like we love murder mysteries. If something will happen, then it's just like, nah, bro, that's a murder. That's definitely a murder. So I was like, you know what? Yeah, that's gonna be my show's name.
Yeah, it's perfect because sometimes it's just so obvious. Like we could just skip to the end of the part where we find out
yeah,
it's a murder.
We know the husband did it. It's a murder. We got it.
Yeah, exactly. The alternate title is The Husband Did It. I love it. So, okay, so you're a true crime podcaster. Talk about how this started. When did the true crime hook kind of get you? Was it in childhood or adolescence?
Yeah, so when I was younger, a family member of mine, she was murdered, and it just never really got on the news or anything like that. So I happened in Philadelphia, I grew up in Philadelphia, and I remember my parents reaching out, like sending emails to like Fox 29 and ABC and trying to get this in the news to get it, you know, attention to it, and it never really happened. And that's what brought me into being interested in true crime at a young age, and that, you know, as you get older, you find out about TV shows and a podcast, and then you get thrown into the whole community of it.
Wow, I am so sorry to hear that happened. How young were you?
I was 6 when it happened, and she was 12 when she was killed.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it was like a lot when you're younger, trying to like your parents trying to explain that whole concept to you, and that's what really drew me into it because I just didn't understand. I just didn't get it. Like, why would someone kill someone else, you know?
Yeah, it defies any comprehension as adults, let alone for a kid to process that. It's hard to sink into that. So you said that it wasn't getting coverage. Was your family trying to pursue justice and it just wasn't happening? Was it just hard to get media to pay attention, or what was the hurdle?
I remember them trying to really just fight to get it put on TV and on local news because she was found inside of one of those, you ever see like those storage bins, those plastic where you get the dollar store,
yeah,
this big old one.
Yeah.
She was found inside one of those and just, it was never solved. Never knew what happened to her. And it's just still an open cold case. We still have no information on it whatsoever.
It's stunning. So did you ever pursue your own investigation to the case?
I did, but when I was getting into true crime, I was much older, and it was years and years. So to this day, there's still just the minimum amount of information on there. Like, She was picked up from her school, you know, and then found inside the tub. And that's just all the information we have. No one's seen her. No one saw anything on camera. Like, it's just completely cold.
There are so many cold cases, so I don't know why I'm so surprised, but it's awful. And I'm sorry that there have been no leads or more information over the years. So, you know, it's interesting because I didn't know that part of your story. And if you shared it on an episode, it's one I didn't listen to yet. And so, but it's a good segue to my next question, which I ask all my guests, you know, if they're a fan, if they think of themselves as a fan of the true crime genre, and I find it a tough question to ask, especially to those who have a connection to true crime, that of a family member who has a victim within their family. And I have talked to guests with that story. So how do you reconcile being drawn to the very genre that sort of embodies and talks about the stories, the real human stories that your family went through?
So I would say that I am a fan because it's hard to deny that true crime has become part of pop culture. Like, yeah, like my favorite show is Snapped on Oxygen. I love a good Snapped episode. Mm-hmm.
Guilty pleasure.
It's so dramatic.
Yeah.
And I am a fan of it, but I also, like, I'm not like one of those die-hard fans. I can still be critical of the community and, you know, the whole thing and still enjoy and consume it.
So can you talk about that a little bit, though? What are the things you're critical of? It's clear what you enjoy about it, and I totally get that. What are the things you see that make you uncomfortable or that you feel need addressing? And then how do you reconcile it with your own work?
So I think, like, most people at, you know, their early teenage years got into Tumblr. I know I did. And when I got into Tumblr, there's a huge true crime community. And what you see a lot is people who actually, like, idealize and, like, identify with these murderers instead of, like, the victims. Or you see some people who, like, fetishize the killers and stuff like that. Mm. And those type of things, I'm just like, no, that's bad. These people are not your hero.
Yes. I think I'm much older than you. And so I've read about what you're talking about. It's so embarrassing. I was reading a memoir and it was about all these, like, a big thing is young girls sort of falling for school shooters. That's like a huge thing.
Yeah. And whole Columbine community.
Yes. Yeah. See,
it's so cringy.
I think we must be very different ages because that was very much news to me. And very problematic. And maybe symptomatic of a much bigger problem. But so you can recognize that and see, like, oh, that's an aspect of this community not interested in, but you don't feel the need to, like, reject everything.
No, because I think even when that comes to that side of the community, there's, like, a deeper, like, psychological level to it. Because I remember I had a friend who was one of those, like, Columbine girls who really, like, identified with the two boys, but she also had her own personal issues that came to, like, bullying and insecurities like that. So when she would tell me about it, I understood, like, why she felt that way. And I think when it comes to a lot of people who do, like, you know, really connect with these killers and stuff like that, there's on a deeper level, they're looking for some sort of, like, acceptance, or, you know, they want to feel normal in a way. And, you know, there's nuances to it. So I don't reject everybody. I try to be completely understanding. And I'm still a fan of the community. But I can also be critical of it at the same time.
I couldn't agree more. I feel the same way. There's things I see that I'm not, you know, I don't think is the right way. Or I don't like how something, you know, even how some stories are told, I have a problem with. But I agree.
Yeah.
It's you're never going to please all people. And one community can have many different points of view within it. So you kind of have to, I guess that's why we start our own podcast, right? So maybe that's why we get to do it the way we want to do it. So also, I want to say that that's a very generous way to be a friend to somebody like that, because you're right. And not, people are not all what they do. We talk about this a lot on Dialogue. We can't be defined by our worst moment. And there's probably, like you said, a lot playing into why those girls are drawn to that in those unique situations. So that's good that they have someone they feel they can talk to and that you can handle that, because I don't know that everybody could.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, it's interesting to hear those takes. Why I never, like, really say, oh, no, you're bad. Like, no, well, explain to me why you love Richard Ramirez. Like, I really want to know why.
Yeah, I'm glad you're doing that, because I'd have to tune out, I think. It's just too hard for me to imagine. Okay, so let's, this is also interesting given your experience growing up with a family member, but why do you think some cases kind of bubble up to the forefront of national interest and media coverage and almost become iconic and legendary? Like, we all know certain cases and certain names, and then other ones just don't. Do you have thoughts on why that is?
I think it's part of just like pop culture again. And what we see in pop culture is the media entertainment society really likes a certain look of a person. Like, for instance, JonBenet Ramsey, like a small white girl, blonde hair, blue eyes, pretty. Everyone's attached to that case because she looks like, you know, quote unquote, you know, American like ideal. And I feel like cases like that where someone is usually like even her like white woman syndrome, I feel like that's like a real thing when it comes to true crime and just the entertainment part of it. Everyone likes that certain look and appeal, like, oh my God, that pretty woman got murdered. Or like for Snap, for example, that's why everyone loves Snap, because everything's all flashy and pretty and looks nice.
Right. I agree. I think it's such a problem, though. I mean,
yeah. Like,
so was that sort of the foundation of your starting the podcast and who you were going to cover in terms of stories and victims?
Yeah, because as I got into true crime and like started watching ID Discovery and like Deadly Women and stuff like that, you know, I started noticing that I'm not seeing that many people who look like me, talk like me, came from the same background that I came from, who are talking about these conversations and talking about the people who also look like me and came from places like me.
Right.
So that's why I was like, you know what? If I'm not finding it, I'll just do it myself then.
And what did you find when you set out to start making this show? I mean, I'm sure there's sadly no shortage of violent deaths in our world, in our country. So I'm sure you could find the stories, but what was that experience like looking for them and finding all these stories that, you know, nobody knew about?
I've found that like a lot of the stories of people of color and like trans people, LGBTQ people, there wasn't that much information on it. Like, you look up a case and you'll just get, most of the time, I'll just get like a name, the place where they got killed, and like a number of Crime Stoppers, and that's it. Like, no other details. So I then had to do my due diligence and like really dig into it. And a lot of the times I'll like find the obituaries and then I'll like look up the family's names of who's like been commenting on it or listening under it. And I'll just message them on Facebook like, hey, I'm doing this show. I want to cover the case of your loved one. I don't get that much information. Could you like help me out? And like 9 times out of 10, the families are like really grateful and forthcoming with all the information, because they feel the same way, that their family member isn't getting the coverage that they should have. And they would love to give me all the information and details of exactly what happened.
Wow, that's amazing. I was wondering if they were receptive. I'm glad to hear they mostly are. That's a big responsibility, though, to get that information with somebody's family member. And then to share the story. So that's huge. There's a huge, there's a trust there.
Yeah, it's really, you really have to approach it like delicately. But I've always noticed that the people are there receiving, like on an episode I did recently, I called the mother of a son who was murdered. And at the end of the conversation, which I put in the episode, she told me like off the air that it feels cathartic to talk to someone about it who wants to hear about it. I guess it feels good to get it out there.
Yeah, I would imagine. I would imagine. And, you know, no one, I would think nobody would ever care as much as the mother or the partner of a victim. But when somebody reaches out and wants to know, I would imagine that's a very good feeling if you know, if the spirit and the intention is right behind it. I would imagine that's a huge comfort.
Yeah, because when I do that, I don't just ask for, like, the, you know, the gruesome bloody details. I want to know about the person, because that's what we don't see in the media when we talk about true crime. You don't really get to see the person as a human. A lot of times you just see them as like an object that got murdered. And like, no, they had a whole life and like hopes and dreams behind them. We can talk about the crime, but we should also talk about the person themselves.
That is huge. That's a huge pet peeve of mine. And I'm glad to see more and more storytellers and independent podcasters taking time to kind of create a three-dimensional person around the victim and sometimes even the perpetrator. Not that we want to empathize with them or give them too much of the airtime, but you know,
they always say there's three sides to a story, his, hers, and the truth. So it's always good to try and get the person who did it or accused of doing it side, at least, is to like hear it.
Because that's
part of true crime, the morbid curiosity of it.
Right. There is definitely a morbid curiosity. And there's also context. That sometimes there are contributing factors to things that are relevant to a case. But sometimes there's just, in my opinion, people that do not need any more saying of their names than...
Yeah, like the Luca Magnotta dude who is one of the famous. And then Netflix gave him a show.
Well, they didn't... I mean, would you say they gave him a show or they gave a show about...
The person, the people who found him.
Yeah, see, that I feel that was hard to watch. I did watch it.
Yeah, I've had mixed emotions.
Same, right. I think, yeah, I'm with you. But I feel like that show was not about him... It was more about
finding him.
Finding him and the citizen detectives like you and me who love true crime and want to do good. But yeah, it also told his story like we're talking about. So then there is that aspect. Some of this stuff is not easy. I'm not going to lie. You know, I don't know what's always right or always wrong. But
walking the line in true crime.
Always walking the line. So do you... I have found the more I've gotten into true crime, the more people I've talked to, the more I watch, read, and listen, that what we're really talking about in true crime is almost everything but the actual murder. I feel like it's about all the topics really that our country's talking about right now. And I think that's what makes true crime really compelling. So I was wondering for you, what are these sort of under the surface topics that you see as themes in true crime that aren't necessarily murder themselves?
It really honestly goes case by case, because you might get one case where you dig deep into it and you realize that it's really just about different like classes in the economy, like poor versus rich. Or you might see another case where race really plays into a factor of it, or another case where like misogyny and sexism really plays into a factor of it, or you know, homophobia. Like there's a lot of different nuances in true crime because there's a lot of different nuances and layers in America. And
yep.
When you cover a case, you should take into account what exactly may have been planning to affect in this other than the murder itself and try to address that appropriately.
Yeah, which is so challenging, right? When people believe different things about those topics you just mentioned. Like,
yeah,
it's nice to think that we all agree one of these things is not right or okay, but then not necessarily. And then there's kind of like gray, there's shades of gray within it. But
And then you try to like, again, toe that line of just like sticking to the facts, but sometimes you can't help but get your emotions, your personal feelings involved into it. And I find myself in a situation a lot.
Yeah. What do you do when you feel like you're kind of tipping the line to where you're getting invested into a point that, do you feel that's healthy or not healthy in terms of your own boundaries?
It's human. We can't, you can't deny your feelings and your emotions. And I think if you are a storyteller, you should feel the liberty to comment on the story yourself. I know some people are more analytical and I try to be that, but I also do give my own commentary and I preface them by saying like, this is my own opinion.
Uh-huh.
And I just vent them and let them all out. And if you don't disagree, if you disagree with them, you disagree with them. If you agree with them, you agree with them.
Right. Right. And do you feel there's room at the table for listeners to have a dissenting opinion?
Oh, it's 100%. Everyone has their own opinion and I won't sway anyone against, you know, even if your opinion doesn't agree with mine, I'm not going to say that you're a terrible, awful person or you shouldn't listen to my show because you have a different opinion. I love a discussion.
Yeah.
We can always have a discussion about everything. And I feel like for the most part, you can always kind of come to a middle ground or consensus.
Yeah.
Because I do feel like most people are good people.
Yeah. I think so too. I forget that.
For the most part.
Yeah, for the most part. I think you're totally right. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding and we interpret things differently, but I think for the most part, you're definitely right. What has been the most surprising story that you've covered so far? Either a specific case or topic that came up through a case. What's been like, whoa, I did not expect that?
Oh, so when I started covering trans deaths in America, like the murders, I started noticing a lot of the things, the issues were based around the media and the people's families would misgender these people in their death and their obituaries and stuff like that. Mm. And extensively to the point where, like, one trans woman, when she was killed, her family, like, cut her hair, covered up her nails with gloves, and, like, made her completely nail presenting, and then used her dead name during her funeral. And her partner and all her friends in the community was like, that's not what she would have wanted. Mm. Like, her partner said that, no, she would have wanted to be, like, done up, like, you know, feet to head, like, you know, right. heels, gown, makeup, like, beat face, all of it. She right. would not have wanted to be buried in the suit. And that really just irritated me, because, like, we should be respecting people and life and in death. Even if you don't agree with it, you should respect them.
I mean, you would think almost in death it would somehow be easier. It's like, this is not about you. And yeah, it's also over. So get over yourself.
let them have this.
Yeah. Wow. Are you familiar with the Trans Doe Project? There's the Doe Project, which is sort of an organization that helps identify unknown cold case and missing persons victims. And then there's a Trans Doe. Oh, I'm getting the name wrong and it's annoying me, but there's one specifically designed to help these very cases where people were misgendered or missing. And because maybe family knew them as
their one thing about the name. Other.
Yeah. So it can really slow down
a whole case,
a case and the justice process. So there's organizations designed to help with that, which I think is amazing. Okay. So that's one of the stories that really kind of stayed with you.
Yeah. Cause it's just like you said, like, it slows down a whole process and they're not getting respected in death. And I think anyone who is dying would want to be respected.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels really wrong to do otherwise. Can you talk about the format of your show? Because you have this cool element of adding music. And can you talk about that aspect of the show and how that all came to be?
Yeah. So, like I said, I talk about true crime a lot with my friends in real life. And usually when I hang out with my friends, I always have, like, music playing on in the background just to, like, you know, hang out to and chill out. And I think that music in itself can help drive a message, push a message, make someone feel a certain way, and also just kind of bring people together. Like, you know, music calms a savage beast.
Yeah.
And I think that after listening to a story that may have, like, saddened you or enraged you or made you feel uncomfortable, XYZ, exiting out on a new song that may be new to you and that you really enjoy would be a good way to, like, send people off.
I love
that. Want anyone to end my show feeling downtrodden or, you know.
I love that. So do you have a connection to the artist, or are they just sort of artists that you know and love and you use their music, or are they people you have a relationship with? How do you know them? Or do you?
It's a mixed bag. So I do take a lot of submissions. So I have artists who reach out to me and say, hey, check out my song. If you like it, put it on your show. And if I enjoy it, I do. I put it on my show. I give them a shout out. And I also interview them on my blog, just so, because a lot of starving artists are real. These people put in really hard work for their art, and I'm going to give them the full credit for it.
Yeah.
And then some artists are just artists that I like, indie people who I love, and when other people to share their music. Like, hey, like, this is my playlist. I hope you like it.
I love that. It's a really cool kind of extra dimension to the auditory experience to have then music after a story. So it's very cool. Now, how about your co-host? Who is he on every episode or not? I feel like I didn't hear him in every episode.
No, he wasn't on every episode, but he has been helping me out for a long time when it comes to the these cases. But he was also, because we're both in the military, and our schedules for the long time were, like, completely separate, because at one point we were on two different sides of the world.
Oh my gosh.
So we finally are both back in America together for, like, for good. So I brought him on full time for the show.
Okay. And so how long did you serve in the military?
I'm going on year 6 right now.
Wow.
Yeah, I've been in since I was 19.
That's amazing. Thank you. Can I ask you what inspired that decision?
Well, that college is expensive. Mm-hmm. And I was like, right out of high school, I started working a full-time job at a lab to help pay for school. I was taking some classes. They're like, you know what? No, I'm not going to be in debt for the rest of my life. Yeah. I'd rather go serve my country, get some world experience, you know, broaden my horizons and get some free college out of it.
Good for you. So where are you in the education journey then?
I'm trying to get into the physical therapy program. I just finished up my third semester, but COVID has halted all of that because I can't take my entry level test to get into the physical therapy program right now.
So yeah, no touching, people.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So that's your vision for your vocation.
Yeah. My 5-year plan, because I'm also working on getting a personal trainer certificate. I love fitness. And I got certified as a special needs personal trainer because that's what I want to specialize in. I want to make my own gym for people with special needs to help them better function in their day-to-day lives. Because my brother is special needs. The left side of his body is completely like stiff. And over the course of years, I've been helping him get more mobility. And I've noticed a big change in him being able to do more things by himself and on his own. And when I saw that, I was like, you know what? That's awesome. I want to help more people be able to do that.
That is incredible. That is so beautiful. Honestly, it's really amazing. I would think it really changes a person's mental health when they're stronger in their own body and more capable, right?
Yeah, because you get that. Everyone wants independence. And even if you're disabled, you still want that sense of independence. And like I said with my brother, when he started to be able to like tie his own shoes without help and wash the dishes without help, bathe himself without help, he was happier and lighter and just, sure. You know, he was just doing better because he's like, no, I can do it on my own. I got it. I don't need you to babysit me.
Yeah. Is he younger?
Yeah, he's 20 right now. He's 4 years younger than me. I'm 24.
Okay.
And I still call him my baby. That's my baby brother.
Oh my gosh. Your family's so lucky to have you as his older brother. That's amazing. Is your family into true crime or do they think this is weird?
they think it's really weird.
Yeah. Because
well, my mother is, she's a big true crime buff. Because my family, they're all, my dad, my mom, they love horror movies.
Okay.
But they're like completely separate in their horror movie taste. My dad's more like zombies, aliens, monster movies. And my mom's more like murder mystery, suspense, mm-hmm. and thrillers and true crime.
That is me and my husband. That's really funny. A house divided.
Yeah.
So you're like, I embrace it all.
Yeah, I like both. I love a good zombie show or movie, and I love some true crime.
It's so weird. I can't suspend my disbelief for sci-fi, for zombies. It's very unimaginative of me. I've tried to open my mind to it. I'm just not interested. It's hard enough for me to watch a movie or a scripted TV show. If it's not true crime, I tend to be very skeptical, which is so...
Oh, I just sit down and zone out and let it wash over me.
Yeah, good for you. Taking it for the team.
Just shut off my brain.
I guess, yeah, part of that is maybe part of it. So, again, your age, now I know how young you are, and you've accomplished so much already, and I'm super impressed. But creepypasta comes up on your podcast sometimes, and I technically know what it is. Like, I'm not that under a rock, but could you maybe describe it in your own words and what the kind of thrill and appeal of it is?
It's horror stories made by people who, for the most part, aren't like professional writers. And again, I love horror and I love people being creative, because the horror genre sometimes, like the mainstream stuff, sometimes kind of runs the same path. And I love going on Reddit and different websites and seeing people come up with their own horror stories, be it bad or good, just because it's like, no, this is interesting. I'm glad you're running with this. Go on, do your best, do you. I'm supporting you. I'm going to give it a like and a retweet.
Okay. I mean, people's brains are pretty fascinating. So yeah, I'm sure things come up that are pretty intriguing. Can you tell us what is on your podcast playlist? Like, what are your favorite go-to shows?
I love Three Spook Girls.
I met them. I got to meet them. They're great.
Me and Tara are like close friends. We like text and Skype all the time. I love her. Hear No Evil, 90s Crime Time is really good. If you love like 90s nostalgia and true crime.
I follow her on Instagram. And again, it's on my playlist. I haven't listened yet, but I love both of those things. So yes, that's next up on the list.
Yeah. And then like my go-to always has been Last Podcast on the Left. I've been a big fan of theirs for like so long.
Yeah, they're pretty epic. A lot of people love them. I listened to them for a while. My problem was I could never keep, there were so many voices. It was hard for me to track with who was who. But I probably should revisit it because I know they do great work.
Yeah, it's funny because I actually met Henry Zebrowski before because I was an extra in a TV show he was piloting.
No way.
On IFC, it was a couple of years ago. He like put in the Facebook group that he has that he's looking for extras in Philadelphia. And I was like, I'm in Philly. Like, what's up? I'll come out.
Yeah.
And yeah, I went out to the show, met him. We hung out. We shot a couple of episodes. It was funny. It was great.
That's awesome. Were you a podcaster at that time?
No, at the time I was like fresh out of basic training. I just got home from basic training. I was like 20 years old. I was so starstruck.
Oh my gosh, I love that. You have a very unique portfolio of experience, I have to say. Military, TV extra, podcaster, physical therapist, focusing on special needs, student. It's very impressive.
I juggle a lot of plates.
You do. So one thing I ask all my guests before they go is, what is keeping you up at night?
Other than sleep paralysis, this case I covered a while ago that is still like bothering me because I'm still trying to get into it, called Charlie Chopoff. I don't know if he's based in New York. You may have heard of him before.
I don't know. Tell me more, and I'll see if I remember.
So imagine like Candyman, but he just targets like black and brown children. He was a horrible slasher pedophile who would lure kids away with candy and then like sexually assault them, and then he would cut off their genitals and then leave their bodies to be found on top of rooftops. And that was like his whole MO and calling card. And it was just like horrific.
It is beyond. What time period is this? And did you say New York?
Yeah, it was in New York. It's like 70s time period. And like, it could be like a great movie because there's one part of the case is where they think they have the right person and they go to arrest him and bring him into prison. And then the New Yorkers all find out that the police had the guy in custody. So they make like a huge mob and storm down to the police station where he's at, and like this big standoff between the police and the mobsters because they want to go get the guy.
Oh,
and the police have to protect him. It's insane.
That sounds very cinematic. What is this guy's name?
It's called Charlie Chopoff because the person they arrested may have not been the person who has been doing it. Because after he got arrested, the cases, I mean, there were still some more murders and they weren't sure if there's like a copycat thing or the real person was still out there. Because the person they arrested was someone from a mental institute. And when, you know, you've seen a lot, I've always seen a lot of cases where someone who is, you know, mentally stunted in a way, is more susceptible to false confessions.
Yeah, sure.
So there's always that question in the air. It was like, well, was this the right guy?
Did he get convicted?
He didn't get convicted. They couldn't really pin it on him.
Oh my gosh. So wait, did you cover this? Have you done this episode yet?
I covered it briefly because like, I just wanted to talk about it real quick, but okay. I'm still really trying to dig into it and get every aspect of it.
And so
like
that,
down.
Yeah. So understandable that that would be keeping you up at night. That sounds haunting.
Yeah. It's really dark. Again, like I feel like Jordan Peele would make this into a great movie.
Oh my gosh. Wait, before you said this case, you said sleep paralysis. What is that?
Oh, like, so have you ever like, you know, you fall asleep and you wake up and you can't move at all?
I can't say that's ever happened to me.
Yeah, it's a weird thing that happens to like certain people, but it happens to me like fairly often. I don't know why.
Oh my gosh, it's scary.
Yeah, and the thing is about sleep paralysis, like if you look into it, everyone has kind of like the same experiences where they see like those weird shadow people. And yeah,
sorry.
And some people
I didn't mean to gasp.
And like some psychologists say that, oh, that's because you're still kind of dreaming when you're awake, because you wake up before your body wakes up. that's why you have the paralysis effect and you're hallucinating that thing. But the other people are like, well, why is everyone seeing the same shadow person?
This sounds like a creepypasta, Andre. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, whenever that happens to me, my mom was like, oh, there's the demon again.
Guess I'm up. Wow. Well, I really hope that that doesn't happen to you tonight. I wish you good, peaceful dreams. And
yeah, thankfully, I'm usually a peaceful dreamer.
Good. I'm glad. That sounds really scary. And I look forward to new episodes of Bruh Is a Murder. And yes. I'm really grateful that you came on tonight to kill the small talk.
Well, thank you for reaching out.
Yeah, likewise. And thanks for being on. And please stay in touch.
Of course.